One of the curses of being sick is laying on a couch and having to watch too much TV. But one of the things I saw was Josh Allen's pro day. And you said, well, who is he? Let me tell you a little bit about this young man. He grew up on a ranch outside of Fresno in the huge town of Firebaugh. Never heard of it, have you? It's in the San Joaquin Valley. He was 6'2", about 180, so tall, 6'3", but very, very skinny. But he was an excellent quarterback, but he never went to any elite quarterback camps, and he never went to all the schools that all the other athletes would go to. Instead, he played basketball, leading scorer, threw 90-mile-an-hour fastball as a pitcher. And so when it came to being drafted, offered a scholarship in college, no one would offer him one. So he ended up going to Reed Lee College, a junior college, where he shined as a quarterback, had put up some impressive numbers, but even then, after his 2 years, no Division I school wanted to offer him a scholarship except Wyoming. Now, so that's where he ended up. He went up to Wyoming, and there he grew to 6'5", 235 pounds, and he has a rocket of an arm. And on his pro day, that's where the scouts and people from the different professional football teams come and watch a one-man workout or two or three. He scripted 60 different passes, and one was an 80-yarder. He has an arm that just is amazing. There were 75 media people there and representatives from every NFL team that were present, because they're all interested in this guy that couldn't get one scholarship at one time. He might be a number one pick, at least maybe in the top five. And when he's interviewed, here's what he had to say. It's surreal. All this attention, talking to NFL executives. It's the only thing I've ever wanted to do my entire life. Sitting here is something I've always dreamed of. Now, I can believe that statement, because we can learn what people live for by listening to what they say and watching what they do. And so when it comes to Josh Allen, and I hope he does well in NFL, but when you were to fill in this blank for Josh, he lives for, what would we say? It's football. And that would be the correct answer by his own statements and by his actions and how he's worked so hard for it. Why are we talking about such a thing as Josh Allen? Because really, it serves an example for each of us, because we must ask the same question and fill in the same blank. What do I live for? We started a series last week called Living as Like We're Leaving. In other words, we're describing a person that lives on this earth, but he expects to be leaving soon to go to his real home in heaven. And that kind of person has a certain characteristic about him or her. They live different than the people that don't have that hope. The way they conduct themselves, the way their language, and really what they love and what they live for. And that takes us to the Apostle Paul. And I want you to look with me in Philippians chapter 1, which was read for us, but we're going to look again and start earlier in verse 18. But let me catch you up on Paul. He was a rising star one day. He described himself as Pharisee among Pharisees. He was, according to the law, blameless. Zeal persecuted the church, taught at the feet of Gamaliel. He was a rising political star. But one day he gave that all up and became a messenger for Jesus Christ. And as a messenger of Christ, he suffered. And we can look to his actions and listen to his words, and we can learn what Paul lived for. We find in his own writings in 2 Corinthians that he was imprisoned countless times, beaten without number, often in danger of death. He received from the Jews lashes, 39 lashes, five times. One time could kill a person. He received that beating five different times. Three times he was beaten with rods. Once he was stoned and left for dead. Three times he was shipwrecked, left in the deep overnight. He's been robbed. He's gone hungry. He's been in dangers in the cities, dangers in the wilderness, dangers from wild beasts. It has been said of Paul, there's very few in the church today that are so completely and selflessly sold out to Jesus Christ. And we can know that's really his person. And yet, he didn't see himself as suffering at all. We read in 2 Corinthians chapter 6, in verse 8, we are treated as imposters, but yet we're true. As unknown, yet well known. As dying, and behold, we live. As punished, and yet not killed. As sorrowful, yet always rejoicing. As poor, but yet making many rich. As having nothing, yet possessing everything. Where did Paul have such a sublime attitude towards life and the suffering that he was going through? Well, we're going to get a glimpse in that as we look in the Philippian letter where we've turned to and we begin our reading in verse 18. But let's just catch up where Paul is. At this time, he's in prison once again, but this time in Rome. He's not sure if he'll get out initially or he'll be executed for his preaching of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And it is this time that he writes to Philippians, and we see in verse 18 in the middle of it, the end, he says, yes, I will rejoice. Paul, where do you get such an attitude? He says, for I know that this will turn out for my deliverance. Now that word deliverance really means salvation. And it's used other places for just that word. It's translated salvation. So we have to ask ourselves, Paul, are you talking about you're going to be saved from death or execution? Are you talking about you're going to be saved and go to heaven? And the answer is yes. It's both. He said, well, how would you know that? Well, we read on by his own words. He said, I know this is going to turn out for my deliverance. Through your prayers and the provision of the Spirit of Jesus Christ. And then here in verse 20, according to my earnest expectation and hope. This earnest expectation is an interesting word. It speaks of someone that is running a race and they're about ready to cross the finish line and it's a sprint, so they lean forward to cross the line first. They're earnestly expect to win and be the champion. And Paul is using that language here. He says, I know this is going to work out just great. Because I expect, because my hope, we talked about hope last week. We're born to a living hope. We not only desire to go to heaven, we know we're going because of what Christ has done for us. And those people that live with that type of hope, they live like they're leaving. It shows up in just their whole very person. So that's why Paul says, it's my earnest expectation, it's my hope, as we continue to read in verse 20, that I'll be not put to shame in anything, but with boldness. Christ, even now, as always, it will be exalted in my body, and here it is, whether by life or by death. What's Paul saying? I'm going to win. I'm going to be saved, delivered, whether I live or whether I die. If God decides to spare my life on this earth and that'll give me more fruitful years, I've been delivered. But if he chooses to allow me to die by the hands of the Roman government, I'll be delivered. No more beatings, no more imprisonments, no more shipwrecks, but he'll be taken into heaven. He said, where do you get such confident expectation? That leads us to the next words that he gives us. And that's in verse 21. And this is really the body of our lesson, where he says, for to me, to live is Christ. And to die is gain. Now, when we asked you, when it comes to Josh Allen, for Josh to live is, you all said football. And Paul says, when you put fill in the blank for me, it's easy. It's one word. It's Christ. It's what I live for. But I'm going to die, and that's okay, because that's the word gain. That word's an interesting word. It means profit. It's to his advantage. It's where he will reap an increase. He's got this amazing attitude about death and dying that is foreign to most of the people in the world today, and sadly to a lot of Christians. But we want to expound on that when he says, to live is Christ, and to die is gain. Because those that are living like they're leaving are torn between living here so they continue to help Christ, and between that and leaving here, this world, to be with Christ. And that's what we want to show this morning. Now, as we go on in verse 21 through 26, again, this passage is full of rich language, and you need to read it and just meditate and memorize it if you can. Verse 21, we'll start there again. For to me to live is Christ, and to die is gain. But if I'm to live on in the flesh, that will mean fruitful labor for me. Fruitful labor, not wasted time, but fruitful endeavors. And I don't know which to choose. So there's a dilemma here that we want to highlight. He says, but I'm hard pressed from both directions. Your Bible might say betwixt between the two. That's the old King James or the American Standard. Other Bible says I'm in a strait. And the King James or the New American Standard probably accurately translated and said, I'm hard pressed between both directions. I'm being pushed this way. And I'm being pushed this way. And he says, I don't know what to choose. Having the desire to depart and be with Christ, that's very much better. But yet to remain on the flesh is more necessary for your sake. And I'm convinced of this. I says, I know I'll remain, continue with you for all your progress and joy in the faith. So your proud confidence and me may abound in Christ Jesus through my coming to you again. Let's break this down into three simple points. First of all, when Paul is living like he's leaving, he has a great dilemma. A dilemma is just this question that we outline. I don't know what to choose. That's his language. I don't know what to choose. Because on one end, he says, I have the desire to depart. Now, I'm just going to put a chart to break down all these words so we understand exactly what he's saying. Because he said in verse 21, to live is Christ, and to die is gain. And we understand those two words. To live, that means to continue on in the flesh, and to die means to cease from living on this earth. And he uses that similar language that we go through. To live, he says, is Christ, to die is gain. But here he says, I'm torn because to remain on the flesh, so that's what it means to live. So what does desire to depart mean? What does that mean? If living is to remain on in the flesh, the desire to depart is a desire to die. Now let's talk about the word desire. In the Greek word language, there's just one word that is used for this word desire and also for the word lust. Now, when you hear the word lust, you think good or bad? Bad. Lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes. And lust gets us in trouble. They lead us into temptation and set us up for sin. But lust in itself, all it means is a strong desire, a powerful, strong desire. So if we lust for the wrong things, that can get us in trouble, but you can also lust for good things. And Paul is using the word here, I have this desire, and you could put in your margin, lust. I lust to depart. What does depart mean? Leave. What does that mean? Die. Does he have a death wish? No. We have to rethink our whole attitude towards death. Because when we think about someone died, we think, well, we know when you talk to someone intellectually, they continue to live. But we think emotionally like they cease to exist. They're no longer here. And since we don't see them, they're gone. They've passed away. Isn't that the language we use? But death does not mean that you cease to exist. Death, James chapter 2 and verse 26, is just merely a separation of the real you, the spirit, from the body. Death means separation. That's all it means. So when a marriage dies, there's a separation. And when you die, there's a separation of your relationship between your spirit and your body. Your body, you don't use it anymore. Your spirit is set free from it. You continue to live. You have not ceased to exist. And yet we think sometimes as death is this scary place where I no longer will be. No, it's just a transition from one place to another. Like from the womb into the world. Was that scary for most babies? Yeah, maybe that's why they come out crying. Like, they want to get back in there, right? It's like transitioning from high school into the real world. It's what's time to get living. You know, get out there and apply my knowledge and work and put. Isn't that scary, though? The biggest day of your life is when you get to leave. As a Christian, because of this living hope that emboldens you, did you know that you're going to transition and actually literally be birthed into heaven? And to get into heaven, you got to leave the flesh, because flesh and blood cannot inherit the kingdom of heaven. That's what Paul's saying. He says, to live is Christ, but to die is to depart this world, but go somewhere else. Paul doesn't see himself ceasing to exist. He just sees himself as taking a trip. And he says, that's my strongest desire. Here's the problem. For a lot of Christians in their walk, they desire other things in this world more than being with Christ. And we'll outline some of those things later. But that's our struggle. When things that are good things captivate our interest and our attention, and we desire them more than being with Christ, Satan's got a hold of us and he's going to lead us astray. When Jesus says, here's the greatest commandment, love God with all your heart, all your mind, all your soul, and your strength, what does that leave over, left for something else? It seems like, that sounds like it all has to be for Christ. You say, well, Paul, why are you so eager to get there? 2 Corinthians 12, he says, I know a man, speaking of himself, he said, whether in the spirit or not, was taken up in the third heaven. He got actually transported somehow and got to see the heavenly realms. He heard words that are inexpressible. He said, well, Paul, what did you hear? What did you say? They're inexpressible. I can't tell you. But he had the privilege to peer in, you know, pull the curtains back and look into the heavenlies. And I imagine that fueled his fire. I want to go more than anything. In fact, I don't know what to do. I'd rather die so I can get out of here and go. But I know if I stay and remain on the flesh, that's necessary for you. It's more profitable. I continue to help others get there as well. See his sacrificial attitude? But when it comes to me, my own personal choice, he says, to die, this is very much better. Better than what? Living. Can anyone say that? Yeah, the day I leave is better than the day I live. Well, for the Christian, that's what it means to live like you're leaving. Because you know you're just going to a place that's so much, much, much better. You just can't wait to get there. And anything you love more on this earth becomes your idol. And we have to focus on what really is important. That's why we're going to ask later, to me, to live is blank. What are we going to put in the blank? So that's a great dilemma. And when you look at it, he says, I'm hard-pressed. I don't know which to choose. But isn't it a win-win situation? That's what's beautiful for a Christian. If I stay on, it's great because I still get to be with you. I still get to be involved in fruitful labor. And that's a very important word because a lot of times people spend their life wasting the opportunities and abilities they're given. So when it's all said and done, they can't take anything with them. And so pretty much it was wasted labor. But Paul says, here's something fruitful that it'll bear benefit in heaven on the other side of the of this physical realm. And we'll talk about that, Lord willing, when Jesus later, when Jesus said, lay up treasures in heaven. You can actually make deposits in heaven by the work you do now and reap the benefit of those deposits later. Now, money, that won't do it, will it? Because you can't take it with you. But that's what Paul's saying. This is a great win-win. I can stay here and get other people to make sure they go with me, but if I die right now, I get to go early. So there's no negative about it. Death is the greatest day of your life that's yet to come. We haven't seen anything yet. We haven't begun to live. So here's what Paul goes on to say. Those that live like they're leaving, I want you to understand they live in great expectation. Remember we said hope is made up of two words. What were they? Desire plus confident expectation. Now we have both these words used in this text. Paul says, I lust to go. There's a strong desire, right? He says, that's the only thing I want to do. And he says, I expect to go. Because to die is gain. It's profitable. I'm not losing. Death is not a loss. It's a reward. And so that's why when he sees that I'm hard pressed between both directions, have the desire to depart and be with Christ. There's, he's saying, there's one thing I know for certain. I don't know a lot, but I do know this. The day I die, I'm no longer with you, but I will be with Jesus. Now, can we say that? That's what a living hope is. It's not like, I think I'll be there. I hope I make it. See, we use the word hope as wish. No, a living hope is what says, I know. I know. I know I'm going to be there. So that's why I eagerly anticipate it. Now, I think about this. On this earth, I can do two things. I can read about Christ. And sometimes when you read about his walk on this earth and you read about his teachings and you look and you read his miracles, sometimes it's almost as you're walking with Jesus. When you look at him over and over again, when he's teaching on the Sermon on the Mount on the hillside that overlooks the Sea of Galilee, and he said, behold the lilies of the field. You could see the lilies and maybe smell them as he speaks about how Solomon, was all his glory, was never arrayed in such beauty as these. And yet God's going to take care of us. Don't be anxious. And you could see the birds. And he said, consider the birds of the air. And you could see him. And then you're on the boat. Remember that time? When you read about Jesus, he's asleep on the boat, and there's this furious storm assailing the disciples. And these guys are fishermen. They've been out there, and they know what it's like. And yet Jesus is asleep. Why? He's the creator of the heavens and the earth. He creates the storms and the winds and the water. He's not worried about anything. But they wake him up and say, Lord, don't you care that we're perishing? You can feel their angst. And if you were there, you could feel yourself being worried for your own life, right? To live or die. And I can only imagine just the fear that moved from the storm to Jesus when he said two words, peace. In the Greek, it's two words, be still. And then, calm. He says, now they're afraid, not of the storm, but they're now afraid of Jesus. Who is this man? Even the winds and the wave obey him. You can read that. You can almost imagine you're there. I can come to know Jesus on this earth. Knowing Jesus is more about than reading about him. It's knowing him personally. It's knowing and tasting of his forgiveness. When you realize that he died, yes, for all men, but he died for me, Jack Hafer. And even though I wasn't worthy of it, that if I'm willing to repent and make him and exalt him as Lord of my life, he says, I'll forgive you. And I'll write your name down in the book of life. I come to know him when I start following his words. In love, out of love, I keep his commandments. I realize boy, this is truth. It does work out, and it's setting me free. And it just imprints over my mind and on my spirit over and over that he is who he is, he says, Lord of Lord and King of Kings. When he keeps me out and leads me away from temptation and he guides my paths and he helps and blesses me when I don't deserve it, you come to know, and when you taste of his goodness and loving kindness, you know he's real and he's alive and he works and lives with us. You know him. There's something I cannot do while on this earth, and that's be with him. Isn't that right? Paul says, I have a strong desire. I lust, is the word he uses. And it's to die, not because it's the end of my existence and being, but it's when I transition from this physical world to spiritual, and he says, I'm going to be with Christ. That's something you and I cannot do until we leave this earth. Now, I've tried to imagine what that's going to be like. And I just hit a blank wall. I can immerse myself in his teachings. And I can put myself in his miracles. I can taste his loving kindness in my life. But I can't imagine what it's like to stand face to face with the creator of the heavens and the earth. There's just nothing I can draw on as a base of reference to think about it, compare it to what it's going to be like. It's just a total blank. And we're talking about the one who by which everything was made in the heavens and the earth. Paul says in Colossians, it was all made by him and it was made for him. And I can look at the universe around us and the galaxies and the amazing mass of material and energy and the stars and the planets, and he's spoken into existence. Paul says he keeps it together. It is all there to display his glory and his handiwork so we might humble ourselves before him. And what is it going to be like to stand before him? I have no idea. I do know this. In 1 John chapter 3, he says, us that are called the children of God, we shall see him as he is because we will be as he is. Now, no one can see God and live. But when we leave this physical body and we're transported into the spiritual, we're going to be able to see God face to face. We're taking on somehow his glorified nature. I don't know what that's going to be like. Paul got a glimpse. He said, that's why I want to go. And for the Christian, the more we understand what the gospel is all about, it's calling us home to this type of hope. So we have a great dilemma, each of us. If we're living like we're leaving, it's like, I don't know if I want to stay or go. I don't have a death wish. I got lots of things I can do down here, but I want to go. And I want to go because I know I'm going to be with Christ. And that's very much better than anything you could offer me on this earth. Amen? Amen. So that leads us to our last one. As we review, those that live like they're leaving, they're torn between living and leaving, because they can't wait to be with Christ. And here's the third one. Because those that live like they're leaving, they're going to have the same attitude that Paul has when he says, for me to live is Christ. So let's put that on the board. Isn't that what he said? For me to live. See, I'd rather die. But if I'm going to live, when you say, Paul, what are you going to live for? What's your ambition? What are you going to do? What's your time going to be spent at? So that's easy. One word. Just like we Josh Allen, we gave him one word, football. He said one word. It's Christ. Now I'm going to ask you humbly and lovingly, what would you put in that blank if it was for your life? And if I didn't ask you, if I asked your spouse, what would you say is the number one word in your spouse's life that they live for? And they'd probably give an accurate answer, right? It might be football. It might be sports. It might be relationships. It might be money. Who knows what it is? But everyone has a word that puts in that blank for their life that describes who they are. And God knows what that word is by watching you and listening to you. watching what you do, how you conduct yourselves, what's important to you, and listening to your words, what you talk about or what you don't talk about. So let's just kind of play with that for a while. But here are a couple principles I want you to see. When I live, when what I live for is tied to heaven or spiritual things, then when I die, Paul says it's gain. Why? And we're gonna understand, I want you to understand why. I'm going to reap great rewards because now I'm going to be united with that which I've invested my life in. You say, well, I don't understand. Let's put the opposite. When what I live for is tied to this earth, then when I die, I'm going to suffer great loss. Why? This is easy to see. Because I'm leaving behind that which I've invested my life in. Because I've left it, it remains, and I'm in heaven, and it's down. I hope I'm in heaven. I hope. And I use that hope not as a living hope, maybe a fanciful one. I'm going to suffer great loss because everything I put my energy to is gone. Can't take it. That's why Paul says, it's great profit when you live for Christ, when you lay up treasures in heaven, because you finally get to realize the reward of all the things you've been investing up there. Deposit, deposit, deposit. Let's just give us a couple examples. Sometimes for people, we always use money, so we'll just use money because it's a common theme. Money's talked about in the Bible is more than lots of other topics because it's afflicted man from the beginning, the onset of time. 1 Timothy chapter 6, he says, the love of money is a root of all sorts of evil, and many who have been pierced by the temptation have fallen away from the faith. So if I say wealth it is, I'm going to suffer loss because when I die, we know the answer. What is it? Can you take any of it with you? And so everything you worked for, and Ecclesiastes says that really wonderful picture, it's someone else is going to use it. They're going to spend it. So there's a huge loss. Well, what if it's possessions? I'll just say stuff. Better toys, bigger toys, more toys, faster toys, shinier toys, nicer TVs. I got a 65-inch because the other one had a line going down it. Then it got another line, so good. Now I can get a 65-inch. Can I take that TV with me? Well, I want to watch it in heaven anyway. No. But if my life is tied to stuff, when I die, will I suffer loss? Because everything I've invested myself in, so my life is my cars. My life is my home. My life is haunting. My life, you're going to suffer loss. This is the saddest thing when you die. Isn't that the saddest picture? Everything you've collected, there'll be a line of people trying to pick through it for a dime on the dollar to take home your treasures and put them in their house. Isn't that what's going to happen? We call it an estate sale. No, it's a suffering loss sale is what it is. And that's true with everyone. So, well, my kids are like it. Oh, really? They're the ones that are holding the estate sale, aren't they? So they can get the dime on the dollar. And so we could go on and we could display this for like, well, for my life, it's pleasure. I know a lot of people. I know Ecclesiastes says, enjoy the day that God has given you because you don't know if you have tomorrow. But there has to be balance because some people, all they live for is pleasure. Some people have put off working in their youth to go out and travel the world around, live on the beach somewhere in Costa Rica, and they say, well, we'll spend our retirement now, but we'll work into our 70s and 80s. Okay? If you spend your whole life is just to have fun, you'll suffer loss. Because it's interesting. Ecclesiastes says, the living know they die, will die, but the dead don't know anything, for they have no longer any reward, for their memories forgotten. You'll be like the rich man when he died. He found himself where? No pleasure, but in torment. The last one I would share is for me to live is just to have Christ plus fun. Maybe that's okay. Maybe I could put two things up there together. Well, I love this passage. The parable of the sower, remember it? There are four types of soil. The hard ground, the stony ground, But the ones that are most dangerous is the thorny ground. The thorny ground, the people are still here. Because the hard ground, they never took root. The word never did. There was never any faith. The stony ground, there was faith initially. They had great joy and they were excited. But when persecution came up, they just withered away. We don't see them anymore. But the thorny ground and the good ground, those two individuals still, you can see them. They have faith. But the problem with those in the thorny ground, well, here he explains it. He says, the worries of the world, the deceitfulness of riches, and the desires for other things, Christ plus something else, choke the word and it becomes what? Unfruitful. And I like this picture of a house overcome with weeds, because if you don't do your due diligence, that's what happens to our physical homes. And if we don't watch out, that's what happens to our spiritual homes. Choke the word. And Paul says, for me to live as Christ, I want to be fruitful while I'm here. But if I die, that's great, because that's profit. I get to go home. And so there's no room for anything else there with Christ. It's Christ and Christ alone, or we're fooling ourselves. And so I asked, just humbly, when it's all said and done, what's on your blank? For me to live is blank. Can I honestly say it's Jesus Christ? Or is it Jesus plus something? Or is it something else entirely? Oh, I believe in Jesus, but he's down here. Because for me to live, what is your number one spot? So where do other things fall? You know, well, they're so far down below Christ, you can't hardly even see them, because it's with all your heart, all your mind, all your soul, and all your strength. Why? Because what he's done for me and who he is, and someday I'm going to live with him. That's all I care about. I hope this helps you, encourage you to set your focus, not to discourage you, but to get you to see what's really important in life. It's about following Christ, because if we miss him, we've missed everything. If we can help you in any way, won't you come as we stand and sing?